Okay, we are discussing Khagga-Visana Sutta, and this is actually the sutta that we are discussing for a long time now. It actually consists of 41 verses, and all are really beautiful and giving some or explaining some attribute of the spiritual life. And one by one we are discussing. And the beauty of this sutta is this, in a way, the verse, each and every verse is attributed to a Pacheka Buddha, how he has achieved Pacheka Buddhahood. And after achieving that, he is making some sort of exclamation, some sort of, say, utterance, udana, about how he has achieved it. Now, some are maybe kings, some are merchants, so likewise they have led different lives before they become a Pacheka Buddha. And today's verse is actually attributed to another king. So one property of this king is he's called Anivatta. So Anivatta is a Pali term, and its literal meaning is not retreating. So basically this king is a kind of a warrior, and whenever he is going to a war, he never retreat, he never take a rest, or he never get defeated. He is continuing his task till he is victorious. And even if he is go to another task, suppose there is a assigned task, suppose there is something he had to settle. So he doesn't stop in between. He is a person who is quite determined and was able to fulfill whatever the assigned task properly. And therefore, we can mention that he is living up to the name. His name is Anivatta, literally meaning that not retreating. So as a result, so he is actually living up to the name. He's a good warrior and never get defeated, and every time he is trying to accomplish his goal. So such a character is there with this king. So now one day this king is traveling by the country, and he has arrived to a place where certain fishermen are putting a net in order to catch fish. Now, you know, this catching fish is in different ways are available. And one method they use is to use a net, fishing net. So they are putting it to the sea, and then slowly they are bringing it to the ocean, to the shore. And from there, many people get together and they are pulling it to the ground, to the field. So as a result of that, there are many fish being caught to that net. And they have noticed that a huge fish is caught. But as they are drawing it, pulling it towards the land, so this fish was able to escape. He has broken the net and he has escaped. Now these people were shouting that they were having a lot of hopes about this fish. And so they were now quite disappointed, and they were shouting that fish has escaped. It has damaged the net, and also he has escaped. It has escaped. Now, while walking, king also heard this noise. King also understood, okay, they were putting a net, a fishing net, and there was a kind of a fairly skillful fish. It was able to escape from the net by damaging the net. Has broken the net and it has escaped. Now, king, after hearing this noise and after getting the message, so he is putting it in a different manner. Now, you know, when a person encounter various day-to-day activities, certain people simply can take it to the simple level or to the surface level. They can simply notice, okay, these fishermen have put a net and one fish has escaped, and that's it. That's all. I mean, there is nothing much. But there are various potential people who have some internal characteristics, certain skills already developed, taking from the long samsara. So when a simple incident happens, so they are trying to look at it deeply. They are sometimes connecting it with their lives. They are trying to connect it with their spiritual life. So this is something common that we can come across even during the Buddha's time. There were many such incidents have happened. Now here also, once this king has noticed that there's a certain fish, strong fish, has escaped from a net. So this king was thinking, he was reflecting. Now this is something to reflect. This is something that I can take it as an example. Now all the people are bounded in this samsara. So they are engaged with so many activities. There are so many obligations, so many responsibilities, and I am bound with sensual pressures. When am I able to release from this net of sensual pressures, this net of so many obligations, this net of so many worldly affairs? Is it possible for me to escape from this net of worldly affairs like that fish who has escaped from that fishing net? Now you can understand how a person with that sort of a caliber, such a renunciative thoughts, how he is thinking. Now there is a small point that we can actually connect with to another sutta, where Buddha mentioned that when someone is again and again thinking sensual pleasures or sensual thoughts, so his mind get inclined towards the sensual thoughts or the various sensual desires, because he continuously, purposely thought about various sensual desires, sensual gratification. Now after a while, what happened is his mind get conditioned to think in that line. Now he doesn't need to purposely think, rather mind being conditioned to think like that. Now it has generated a certain pattern in the mind. Now whenever there is no any kind of a particular activity to do, or any, if there is no anything special to think, mind automatically shift to that typical sensual thoughts. So that has become its kind of a latent tendency, kind of a inner characteristic, inner trait. Because at the beginning, that particular person purposely used the mind to think in that line. So that is, in a way, we are sort of habituating our mind, familiarizing with the particular way of thinking, and ultimately it becomes a habit. So there are many advantages as well as disadvantages in this way. Because if we use our mind in a sort of a good habit, suppose you are thinking about some sort of a renunciative thoughts, so then mind get conditioned into that line. Okay, you are thinking about how to offer dana, how to give something to a person, how to help another person, how to renunciate the whole, say, even the worldly life, how to become a monk, whatever it is. So likewise, so you have different way of thinking. So because you have thought in that line for a considerable period of time, as a result of that, now mind being automatically thinking in that line. So this is a something that we have to think, we have to understand, because we ourselves get into trouble if we are conditioned to think in a wrong way, in a wrong manner. Our mind being conditioned to think in a particular manner, particular style, without our knowledge, now mind is thinking in that line. It's very much like an ox or a bull pulling a cart onto the same route, even without the person, now it will do it. So similarly, our mind also is driven, or is it? It is thinking according to those preconceived or kind of preconditioned manner. Now, this particular king, even though he is currently a king, he had some sort of a renunciative attribute in his mind. Now, after he encountered, or after he noticed this fisherman's story, the incident that a particular fish has escaped from the net. Now he is attributing, he is actually thinking in a way, how am I going to release from this net of worldly affairs? How am I going to escape from all these many responsibilities, all these various say difficulties that I am coming across because of being a king? So this is a different way of thinking. Now, while some people are thinking how to become a king and to kill others and do all sorts of naughty things and to become the king, now he being a righteous king, a very strong king, now he is thinking differently. How am I released from all these bondages and to be free like that fish who has escaped? Now, while thinking in that line, now he is further continuing his journey. And then he is reaching to an area which is filled with a lot of trees, a lot of forest area. Now he is going through. And all of a sudden, he understood there is a bushfire. And many trees are now being burnt. And bushfire is sort of traversing by burning whole area. And after seeing how this fire is spreading, it has started in a particular place. Now it is spreading into a certain direction, maybe depending on various conditions like wind direction, etc. So as a result of that, now certain area being burned. But another point he understood, okay, once it has burned a particular area, this particular fire never returns to that burnt area because it is fully burnt. Now, when the fire is spreading, it is always searching or always directed towards an area which is not burnt. But once some area is being burnt, the fire cannot come back to that area. So this is something, a kind of a principle that is typically used in the firefighting. Say, if you are familiar with these bushfires, so they are making a kind of a rod, kind of what we call as fire fence. So this fire fence is nothing but kind of a line or kind of a route which might have a kind of a breakage to the upcoming or incoming fire. And if it is again coming further, so we can make a little fire and we are going to extinguish that. So once that little fire being extinguished, the main fire, the major fire cannot go beyond that particular place. So this is a very sort of pragmatic principle that typically used in the firefighting. And so the king has reflecting in that line. So he is understanding, okay, there is a particular behavior to this fire. When it has burned a particular area, it never returns. Now, after recognizing that particular point, then he is thinking differently. He is applying that same principle to himself. So what he is understanding is that if there are various sensual desires, once it has been uprooted, if it never burns again, if it never burns the mind again, so that will be a blessing. As a fire does not retreat to a burnt place, never comes back there, just so one does not retreat to the strands of sensual pleasure that have been burnt by the fire of path knowledge. So there are certain insights, very powerful insights, so that are able to uproot certain amount of defilements. So that we might have heard, okay, from the first, say, path fruition, the first level, sotapanna state. So there are certain level of sanyojana fetters being cut through. Typically mentioned as sakkaya ditti, that is the self view, or personality view, vichikicca, the doubt, silabbada paramasa, some sort of taking, grasping rituals, thinking that it will provide a lasting freedom. So these kinds of some sort of gross level of defilements are being uprooted when one attains the sotapanna level. So they, it is very much like that fire. So it has burned through this insight knowledges, a certain amount of defilement, certain amount of fetters are burnt. So once they were burnt, the fire never come back because of the task accomplished. So this king is now thinking like that, okay, is it possible to remove this defilement forever, not to return back? Now, what he has seen is a simple fire, a bushfire, but he has recognized certain characteristics in this bushfire, and he is now applying it to his mind to eradicate defilements, and he is thinking, is it possible to remove certain defilements forever? Now, when he is thinking like this, his mind being more bent towards the renunciation, and then he renunciated the worldly life and he became a monk, and now he is continuing his practice and he was able to accomplish his goal. He was able to burn all the defilements so that they will never build up again. And he was able to escape from the whole worldly affairs, different types of bondages, different kind of desires, craving forever, not to return. So after he has fully released, fully accomplished, he is now a Paccheka Buddha. Now he had made this utterance, or he has made this verse. It goes like this. Sandala yitvana sangyojanani jalangva bhetva salilambuchari agyiva daddang anivattamanu eko chare kagga visana kappu. Sandala yitvani sangyojanani. Now sangyojana. Sangyojana is the Pali term for fetters. So typically there are 10 fetters explained in Dhamma. And now the phrase here mentioned, having broke up all the fetters. Jalang bhitva salilambuchari. Now jalang, so that means a net, which is being broken by a particular fish. This ambuchari is a fish, a Pali term for fish. And this particular fish is capable, who was able to fully break the net and was able to escape. Jalangva bhitva salilambuchari. Agyiva daddang anivattamano. So like a fire which is burning and never return into the burned place again. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. The one may live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So even though we can understand, okay, this is a very simple, say, verse, with simply four sentences we can say, but there's a very deep meaning. So these simple terms, these simple verse representing a huge message or a huge meaning to the whole readers. So there are several similes here, and how one who is more bent towards renunciation, how he is thinking, and how a person with such spiritual qualities, how he is sort of mapping all these day-to-day activities, various experiences to the benefit of his goal. So these are something that we can actually look into. It is not that always life becomes quite smooth and providing us all the, say, happy experiences. Time to time, there may be various experiences that we might have to encounter which are difficult. Are we able to map those experiences to the benefit of our spiritual growth? So there are many incidents. Say, for example, some people, whenever they come across some difficulty, say they stop the thing altogether. Suppose they are meditating and someone is making a noise, and they simply get angry and they simply get up and that's it. Or there may be raining, and since it is raining, so today I can't meditate. Okay, this is today, it is quite warm, quite sweating, so I can't practice. So there are many excuses. But on the other hand, a person with a lot of effort can use the same hindrance, or rather the obstacles, to the benefit of his own self. So there are various obstacles happening on his way, but he know how to use them so that he can learn from them, he can strengthen his mind, and even to improve further in the spiritual side. And they may have encountered so many incidents in their lives, and they know how to look at them according to the Dhamma. They know how to convert those opportunities to the benefit of growth. So therefore, it is up to us how to use various activities or various incidents that we are daily encountering in our lives to the benefit of ourselves, to the benefit of a spiritual path. So this cannot be actually teach, cannot be taught, but we have to have the kind of yoniso manasikara, the wise reflection, wise understanding, so that various incidents happening, it appear probably like no use, it appear probably like say kind of an obstacle, but when we are wise, when we are using proper wisdom, we can make use of those appearing like insignificant, make a kind of a significant event. Appearing like an obstacle, but one is able to make use of them like a blessing. Now actually today's whole world is still going through this COVID pandemic. But I know there are many people have made use of this opportunity to practice, because sometimes their working place are sort of closed. They have to work at home, and they got some amount of time to improve their practice. So they started a different lifestyle. And rather than continuously watching same movies or news and ultimately get depressed, so one is now trying to make use of the opportunity for the benefit of oneself. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, so when someone is encountering certain amount of sorrow, some amount of calamity, so there are two opportunities. So after one is going through such kind of a disastrous situation, certain amount of people, so they got crazy because they can't bear it. They are crying, they are weeping, and they are asking why this happens to me, why this happens to me. So they take it so personally, and they ultimately get depressed or really shocked. But there's another group. So they start to search. So what are they searching? They are searching, is there a way out? Is there a way to completely be free from this mass of suffering? What is the alternative path? I have taken a particular path, it has completely failed. I have bankrupted. I have encountered a serious problem, a serious setback. So rather than crying and weeping and getting depressed, is there an alternative? Is there a separate, completely different path which I can undertake? So therefore, there are many, many people, once they really go through such kind of a disaster, so they are making use of that disaster as a breaking point, as a turning point of their life. So sometimes people are intelligent enough that the incident doesn't need to happen to themselves. Buddha actually has mentioned a kind of four groups of people. So the first group is someone who is quite wise. So there are a certain group of people, they are going through certain hard time, they have encountered suppose earthquake or flooding or whatever situation, they are now going through a hardship. So that is being observed by a certain person. So this person is a very wise person. So after observing that situation, he is now reflecting, so this life is so vulnerable, so these are the difficulties, the realities that all human beings have to face with. So therefore, I should work so that I can overcome all these difficulties. Either maybe with worldly way to have some sort of a safety, or either to have a kind of a everlasting solution so that I may not go through this whole difficulties in the future. So the thing didn't happen to him and not even to his relatives. But he has seen that certain group of people are going through a real disaster. So with that, he becomes sort of awakened. So he is now started to work towards his own, say, freedom. There's another group of people. So when these things are happening to another another nationality, another country, another village, so he doesn't bother about it. But when it is happening to his own relatives, to his friends, to his close abidings, or to his villagers, then he is shocked. Now he is awakened. Now he want to go through, say, practice. He want to learn Dhamma. He want to protect precepts. Now he is now getting some urgency. This is another group of people. But the third group of people, even not caring like that. So other people are dying and going through various difficulties. He doesn't care. And he, even his relatives are going through such difficulty, he still doesn't care. But there may be a situation that his own, say, blood relation, maybe a very close friend, maybe his own, say, husband, wife, his own child, mother, father, is going through a real disaster. Now this person is shocked. Now this is an eye-opening for this person. Now he started to look at an alternative path. He is now awakened to search some spiritual happiness, a spiritual, say, kind of a solution. But there's another group who doesn't even care of that. Others are dying, he doesn't care. His relatives are dying, he doesn't care. Even his close relatives, his own, say, family members are going through some difficulty, still he doesn't care. But at a given time, something happened to himself. He's going through a terminal cancer. He's going through a kind of an accident. Then he understands. Now he opens his eyes. So likewise, these are the different ways that people are behaving. So we can't expect everyone to behave similarly. But people get alarmed. People start to think differently. People use various situations for their benefit at different levels. So similarly, in this situation, in this verse, in this Kaddavisana Sutta, in this verse, actually this king was a very sharp person, very intelligent person, wise person. So certain incidents have happened. Those are not appearing like related to the spiritual life. But this person, this king, is quite skillful enough to make use of those incidents to the benefit of, or to the favor of, his own spiritual growth. So therefore, there are something that we can learn from this. So it is not that we are not encountering various incidents. We daily encounter so many incidents, but we may not be skillful enough to make use of those incidents to the benefit of our practice. How to look at them differently so that we can learn from those incidents. So this is something that we can actually learn from this verse. So with that note, I like to close today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante, currently there are 7 questions. Question number 1, walking mindfulness. Dear Bhante, during walking practice, time to time I get distracted and carried away with thoughts. This happens often these days, and my walking path is 20 to 25 steps, which is a long carpeted corridor. During the first 5 to 10 minutes when I settle in, observing left and right foot, this does not happen. Sometimes I start with noting left and right, and sometimes I observe the sensations of the foot directly. After the mind settles down, and when I could maintain 5 to 6 rounds of continuous attention, the sensations fade away and the mind starts slipping away. As per your advice to some other participants, I try to be vigilant how this happens. It does not happen at the ends where my focus is sharp, since I'm taking the turn and want to maintain mindfulness intact. In the midst of the path, it slips away when everything is going smoothly. I hope Bande can give some guidance with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, when sensations happen, as the question highlights, so those can happen at many different places. We can't actually say predict where it is going to happen. So this itself is a beauty because it is helping us to have a particular insight. So different sensations are available, but we don't know where it is going to happen. So that indicates the sort of non-self characteristics. So we may expect certain way of manifestation of these characteristics, these sensations, but they don't behave as we like, as we wish. So they are happening at many different places and many different ways, and they may be kind of a pleasurable or maybe a sort of painful. So likewise, many different ways they are happening. So this whole drama represents that they are beyond our control. This is one insight that we can actually learn through this direct experience. And on the other hand, as we are going through these sensations, at the beginning they are not really vivid, and we cannot exactly recognize what is really going on. But as we continue our practice, it may become more clear to us that how they are manifesting, how quickly they pass away, and even if possible, what are the causes making them. So likewise, our mindfulness is sharpening and clear comprehension improving, and we even look further and recognizing certain causes, so that our wise reflection, yoniso manasikara, is improving. So likewise, this whole observation is the one contributing towards the wisdom. So observation is continuing, and it's very much like the same observation, everyday observing, but slowly mindfulness is improving. Slowly concentration is improving. Clear comprehension is improving. Our understanding is improving. Various insights are arising. So when it reaches to a higher level, when the wise reflection, these insights are growing, maturing, there may be a situation. So all these different sensations all are very similar. You can't distinguish whether it is rubbing kind of, or whether it is kind of a tingling kind of sensation, or pain sensation, or whatever it is. You can't distinguish. They are simply very minor little sensations, but you can't have distinct character, you can't recognize distinct characteristic. It is the improvement of meditation. It is not that your practice has weakened or mindfulness has weakened. Rather, it is how it is growing. So as things are happening, evolving, increasing, improving, so you are coming across a situation where various sensations are happening, but now you can't name them. You can't clearly even know how they are happening. Now everything has become some sort of a flux. And now mind slowly shift from this sensation. Mind does not have any interest to look at them. Mind simply let it happen. Now very much like mind has taken the back seat, not getting involved with, not interested of involving with it. So this kind of an attitude slowly may develop. So I am just giving a little guideline, so you don't need to have all these expectations to into your mind. It's a matter of continuing your practice. So as a result of that, you may slowly experience all these different states. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bante, can you please explain about the release of the mind you mentioned often as one of as one of the profound end results of our mindfulness practice. Is this related or similar to Nirodha Sampatya? If this is the case, how one should know or explain about it? With metta, that's the end of the question.
No, I can't say this is some sort of a Nirodha Samapatti, but this is something that one can say as a temporary release of the mind. So you don't have to overestimate this experience, but this is a temporary release of the mind. So as I mentioned to the previous question, so as we are improving our mindfulness, as we are improving our wisdom, so when it reaches to some extent, so there's a certain amount of understanding growing. So certain amount of wisdom growing. So when there is no wisdom at all, when there is fair amount of ignorance, our mind is constantly grasping things, one after the other. First sights, then forms, say sounds, then smells, again sights, again forms, again the sounds, then maybe smells, again touching sensations, maybe thoughts, maybe again sights. So continuously, without any break, mind is continuously grasping, because it found some sort of beauty in all this. It consider this as something that you can have some sort of satisfaction. And that is the wrong understanding, that is the ignorance. But through vipassana practice, through mindfulness practice, if you are doing it properly, so this delusion being eliminated, instead the clear understanding is growing. So you are starting to see things as they truly are. What we call as yathabhuta jnana dasana. So now you are looking various phenomena, various incidents again and again, mindfully, carefully observing. As a result of that, fair amount of wisdom being grown. So this is what we call as yathabhuta jnana dasana. One important aspect of yathabhuta jnana dasana, seeing things as they truly are, is the generation of nibbida. It is a must, or Buddha mentioned, yathabhuta jnana dasanam nibbidatthaya. So when someone is going through real understanding of the phenomena, it is inevitable to have dispassion, inevitable to have some sort of disenchantment. Because we are being passionate, we are grasping, we are holding, we are craving, because we don't have the real understanding. Instead, we have certain perversions. We are being deluded. We are being ignorant. So that is why the mind is grasping. But instead, at this level, mind is given a certain training to understand the reality. So when things are really understood, so the dispassion arises, so the disenchantment arises. And then the release becomes natural, that you don't need to throw things away. You don't need to force the mind to release. You don't need to request the mind to release. But Buddha mentioned, freedom is kind of automatic in a way. Because when you know something is burning, why are you holding it? When you know that something is disgusting, why are you holding it? Why are you grasping it? Something like that. So that is the temporary release that we come through our practice. It is a temporary release. Don't think that you are a fully accomplished arahant at this level. Rather temporary, because of the vipassana practice, now you are encountering tadanga nibbuti, a temporary release. Now, you need to further enhance this temporary release. How to maintain this temporary release? Just another second, just another minute, just another 5 minutes, just another 10 minutes. So likewise, practically, we have to work out how to further develop this. So that is where the Noble Eightfold Path come to the picture. So in order to maintain this kind of a release, in order to further facilitate to this kind of a release in order to remove the ignorance. So you need morality, you need concentration, you need wisdom. So this is how the Noble Eightfold Path become some sort of a living practice. It become a kind of art of living. It become kind of a coherent type of practice to the life, connected to the life. It is not separate from your life. Now you have to live with the Noble Eightfold Path. So this is why, this is how actually we can make the temporal release to a kind of a firm, solid kind of a release. Yeah.
Question number, I think it's 3 of 9, general question. Dear Swami Nwansa, recently I came across an explanation of Samatha practicing monk and how the technique of jhana meditation is linked to the development of one-pointedness through satara iddhipada, chanda, chitta, virya, and vimansa. Can mindfulness development be explained and linked to these four as well? We have heard your excellent explanations about Indriya Bala Bodhjanga mapping, but not much about Satara Iddhipada. That's the question. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Iddhipada. There are four Iddhipadas. Chanda, Chitta, Virya, Vimansa. Chanda is the, we can say as the desire. Chitta is the mind or the determination, we can say. Virya is the effort. Vimansa is the wisdom. So these are again a different way of approaches, we can say. Actually, most venerable Katukurunde Jnananda Thero very beautifully tried to explain the kind of a connection between four foundations of mindfulness and then these four Iddhipadas. Say, when you are developing mindfulness, okay, there may be a determination. There may be a certain desire, okay, I have to accomplish some sort of spiritual growth. So, and again, there is a certain amount of wisdom being growing. And you probably use that wisdom for the, as a kind of a, positive quality in order to enhance your further development. So likewise, it depends on ourselves, which one to use for further development, which one to use as the catalyst for our development. So it can even vary. I mean, in a certain time, we may be a lot of effortfully we are practicing. And another time, we are practicing with the determination. Another time, we are simply having a kind of a desire, okay, I want to become a sotapan. So that's a kind of a desire driven. And another time, okay, you are wisdom driven. Okay, you want to investigate what's really happening. So I guess these are different ways how we can motivate ourselves. But ultimately, so these motivations slowly disappear and so the practice is slowly maturing. And therefore, we can't say that every time you may have the same amount of desire, every time you may have the same amount of motivation. So there are certain other suttas explaining that how these desires can be properly used so that you are growing, cultivating the path, so that ultimately that very desire is eliminated. Similarly, sometimes explain that you are using certain amount of conceit to continue the practice. Ultimately, even that very conceit being eliminated. So therefore, it's a kind of a beautiful path, that's something to investigate. And I think that answer is enough for the time being.
Question number 4 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, in most of the short suttas, there are 10 constituents highlighted for the fulfillment of the path. Additional two along with the Noble Eightfold Path. Appreciate if Bhante can explain a bit about the additional two, Samma Jnana and Samma Vimukti, and how these relate to our practice, or at least the advanced stages of our practice. Thank you, Bhante. That's the end of the question.
I can't remember whether I answered the same question last time. There are 8 path factors, as you have mentioned in the Noble Eightfold Path. And when one is developing that Noble Eightfold Path, temporarily, as we discussed just now, one may make encounter some amount of a release. And one may encounter that release is embedded with some amount of wisdom. It is not kind of an ignorant type of a release, but rather it dependent on certain amount of wisdom. So this is where two another components being attached, but still not to the full amount. So those two components are called Samma Vimutti and Samma Jnana. So Noble Eightfold Path is there when one is developing Noble Eightfold Path. So it leads to certain amount of freedom, as well as which freedom is enriched with wisdom. So that wisdom and release are going hand in hand. But only it is being fully completed when one becomes an arahant. So therefore, very beautifully mentioned in the Mahachattarisaka Sutta, a Seka Puggala, a trainee, is fully equipped with Noble Eightfold Path, 8 factors. But only the arahant, Aseka Puggala, only the arahant is fully equipped with these 10 factors. Noble Eightfold Path plus Samma Vimutti and Samma Panya. The noble or the correct freedom, as well as the right wisdom. So these are the additional components that are being developed or are being one experiencing as a result of the development of Noble Eightfold Path. So they are very much like results, and one can time to time live in or experience those results temporarily. And only when one becomes an arahant, Buddha mentioned in the Mahachattarisaka Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, that one can say, okay, he is fully equipped with all these 10 factors.
Question number 5 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, could you please explain Upadana Paccaya Bhava? Much appreciation and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, it's better to think in line with the typical behavior of our mind. So our mind typically likes to become something, or typically like to become someone. Say if you ask from a child that whom that are you going to become? So he will say, okay, I want to become a doctor. I want to become an engineer. I want to become an accountant. I want to become a pilot. So likewise, there are always desire driven and they are want to become someone. So this is the typical nature our mind is developed. This is the typical nature our mind is behaving. Always searching for something else. Always want to become someone. At this very moment, I am not satisfied. I will be satisfied if I become so and so. I am not satisfied right now. I will be happy if I become a Sotapanna. I am not happy right now. I will be happy if I become an Arahant. So we can connect it with the spiritual life as well, likewise. So this desire to become is the bhava. And desire to become is the upadana. Upadana paccaya bhavo. Sorry. I think I made a mistake. Upadana paccaya bhavo. So you're asking upadana paccaya bhavo. So what I have explained is actually the bhava tanha. So this is the tanha component I have explained. So when we want to grasp, so how to explain? When we are grasping, that grasping helps to become a certain, living in a certain, it's a different situation. Say some amount of desire is there. And that desire being driven by what I have explained. So always searching in search of something different. And so that mind ultimately get built in or ultimately get hooked up with this newly created state, and now it has shifted from his normal state. So there is a kind of a normal, real or baseline kind of a state of the mind, but at that line, at that time, one is not satisfied. One is grasping something, and as a result of grasping, now it is coming to a heightened state. Now it is coming to a different state, excited state. So that state is quite vulnerable. That state is quite subjected to various ups and downs. So that is where the bhava, that becoming, is sort of a vulnerable situation. And it is subjected to various, say, changes and impermanent characteristics and all those, all sorts of things. Ultimately, one will suffer. So, upadana paccaya bhavo, therefore, we can say, when tanha is there, the craving is there, one is slowly improving or increasing that craving and grasping it. So, once grasped, so that grasping itself represents some sort of an abnormal behavior of our mind. So, mind can simply stay in a very non-grasping, pure kind of awareness. There are no tension, kind of a release, spacious, all sorts of very peaceful state. We can say as the natural state of mind. But when mind has drifted from that natural state, it goes and grasps something. As a result of that, it has shifted to a kind of a artificial state. Kind of a tensed, stressed state, burdened kind of a state. So that we can say as the upadana, sorry, the bhava, upadana and bhava, I mean, they are interrelated, and upadana conditions bhava. So as a result of upadana, as a result of grasping, so the mind become different, mind become artificial or what to say, excited. So that probably the person may feel, if one has developed fair amount of mindfulness, he may start to feel it. Okay, again mind become burdened. I have again sort of feeling like hooked up. Again mind has become sort of depressed or stressed, tensed. That represents the bhava state. And if one is able to recognize that, then it's a matter of letting go. So once it is letting go of, then again come back to the normal, peaceful state.
Question number 6 of 9. This has got two parts for walking and sitting, but they're both short, so I'll just read them both out. Mindful walking. Dear Venerable Bhante, I was able to feel the smooth towels when walking, but the feeling wasn't that clear because there were small particles attached to my feet. However, when walking across the wooden steps, the particles and the texture of the steps were extremely clear to feel. From time to time, I was distracted and I could hear the sound of bones in my ankles cracking. So that's the end of walking. Mindful sitting. As I meditated, I could feel the tension in my hands and legs. From time to time, I shifted my body position and focused on my intakes and outtakes of my breathing. I did feel that my breathing was a bit forced, and it was slightly uncomfortable, and it was also a bit distracted by external sounds. After some time, I could feel the cool gush of wind being generated from the fan, and afterwards my face started to itch. It was almost as if my face was being consumed by ants. That's the end of both reports.
Yeah, you can continue your practice. I mean, certain experiences are there. Those are representing some amount of growth in your practice, certain amount of body awareness being developed. So you can continue. There is nothing much to correct or to add. It's a matter of further enhancing your practice.
Question number 7 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, are there any relationships with sensations that arise in the body during meditation and our past karma? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's very very difficult to distinctly mention, okay, these are the karma generated and these are the, say, other, say, climatic conditions due to those issues. Or likewise, I mean, it's very difficult to recognize, and that area is very much like the area of the Buddhas, and we don't have that skill to clearly recognize, okay, this particular sensation has arisen because of karma, this particular sensation has arisen because of, say, another reason. So likewise, recognizing each and every reason precisely is impossible.
Question number 8 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, recently I got 2 parrots from a pet store. Both of them were squashed with other parrots, and I brought them home. I feel like I rescued the birds from a terrible fate, for they had been captured inside cages with little food and water. Now I keep them in a large cage and feed them lots of fruits. At least one of them seems happy, but I am concerned about whether it is a sin to cage them. I plan on taming them and letting them fly around the house as soon as possible. I would like Bhante's advice on what I could do to make the birds feel happy when it comes to freeing them or looking after them. That's the end of the question.
Actually, it's difficult to answer. But when you are talking about 2 birds, I got the remembrance about that 2 parrots. One parrot was dropped towards the ascetics, and the other parrot were associating the, say, thieves. So something like that. So you can check, are you becoming an ascetic or are you becoming a good friend to these parrots? So, by anyway, as you are, I mean, if you are having certain considerations related to what you are doing, so if your heart is giving some sort of a question, so if you are harming your, I mean, it's kind of a complaint coming from yourself. So is it a kind of a harm? I am just limiting his environment. So, because I am limiting the freedom in a way. So therefore, in that line, when we are thinking in that line, yes, true, I am limiting its freedom. So they are, birds are actually belong to the nature. So why are we restraining, or why are you trying to constrain them to a limited space? So what you felt is correct, true, and that's why you have enlarged your cage, but still, that is not the natural environment that this little creature is going to enjoy with. So it's up to you. So therefore, if possible, if you can, I mean, release them forever so that they may find their own freedom. So that is the best. So you can think about it.
Last question, Bhante. Question number 9. General question. Dear Bhante, just a gentle reminder, if you had a chance to find out about Venerable Sorpaka with Metta, that's the end of the question.
Sorpaka, you asked something last time, no? Just now I remember it. maybe Chamila can write me the question. You asked something, Sorpaka, what was his previous karma? Or something like that. What are the previous merit that he had, or some such question somebody has asked. Is that the question, Chatu?
Yeah, I forget exactly what it was, but we can have a look at the previous question.
Yeah, and please. If maybe you yourself or maybe Chamila can write it to me, then it will be a reminder for me. But I actually completely forgot it.
Okay.
No, sorry about it.
Okay, so that's the last of the questions, Bhante. So I'd just like to wrap up because we're out of time anyway. So first of all, I'd like to thank Bhante for giving up all this valuable advice to us, and also pass on our merits.
And a small announcement I also like to make. So there is a research opportunity, but I mean, it may be to Sri Lankans. So there is a small research opportunity available. Loku Swami Nahanse like to start with. So with the meditation, with the mindfulness practice, is there any impact towards the environment? So this is something that Some people are trying to understand, some people are trying to make a research, especially Dr. Taradimel is involved in this research, and so she's asking help from Nisarnawane. So Lokusaminanse actually has requested to put a what you call an advertisement in our website. So it is already put in the home page. So you can click on that advertisement, and then if one of you are interested, or if you know someone who is into this sort of research, you can contact Mr. Harsha. His telephone number is there. So please pass the message who are sort of interested of this sort of research. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Vande. And I guess the other thing we want to say is to the people working behind the scenes, seen and unseen, helping to move this program forward. We'd like to thank them. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, we would not go ahead. Theruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Theruvan Saranai.